The cantata La Mort de Lucrezia, or The Death of Lucretia, by Michel Pignolet de Montéclair, performed by the soprano Eugénie Varnier with the instrumentalists of Les Talents Lyriques, directed from the harpsichord by Christophe Rousset. It was the last piece in that Proms Lunchtime Chamber Music Concert from Cadogan Hall in London, which was introduced by Catherine Bott and first broadcast in August 2011. Now looking ahead to tonight.
The BBC Proms 2020 on BBC Radio 3. After a stratospheric rise on the international stage, two star siblings perform a programme of music for cello and piano. From the Royal Albert Hall, Sheku and Isata Kane Mason, today at 5:30 on Radio 3 and BBC Sounds.
Looking forward to that. In an hour, Choral Evensong comes from St Patrick's Church of Ireland Cathedral in Armagh. Now the One Radio 3, it's time for this weekend's edition of the Early Music Show, introduced by Lucy Skeeping.
April 1738, and as the overture to Handel's opera Circe was played for the first time in public at the King's Theatre in London, there was a real sense of excitement in the audience, not only for what the great composer was going to offer in his new production, but also because the title role was to be sung by one of Europe's finest performers, one Gaetano Majorano, the castrato otherwise known as Caffarelli. He'd already conquered all the major Italian opera houses, and it was time to try his luck in London, where the opera-going public clamoured to hear the outstanding singers of the day. Senesino, Faustino Bordoni, Francesca Cuzzoni, and of course the beloved Farinelli. For London audiences, though, Caffarelli was the new kid on the block, and he had much to prove. Born in 1710... near Bari on the southern Adriatic coast, Caffarelli knew from an early age that he wanted to be a singer. He'd shown great promise in his studies with a local teacher, Signor Caffaro, from whom he would later take his stage name. He wanted to follow in the footsteps of 18th century Italy's most famous singers, to have the sort of voice that would not only touch people's hearts, but would also make him a wealthy man. And at just 10 years old, he made a life-changing decision: to be a castrato. Nowadays, I guess the social services might have intervened at this point, but back then, many poor families were prepared to allow a son with a good voice to go under the knife, although, according to the English musicologist Charles Burney, the whole process was hushed up. "I inquired throughout Italy at what place this was done to boys," he wrote, "but could get no certain intelligence. I was told in Milan that it was in Venice, in Venice that it was Bologna, and in Bologna all knowledge of it was denied." But maybe that was hardly surprising. Some boys died in the process, either from crude attempts at anaesthesia or from infection, and even survival didn't guarantee a successful singing career. Just 1% of castrated boys were good enough for the opera. The best of the rest sang in church choirs, while thousands simply failed to make the grade as any kind of singer at all. But young Majorano went for it, and armed with funds from his grandmother, he spent the next 5 years in Naples, training with one of the most distinguished singing masters of the time, Nicola Porpora.
Thank you.
Argentinian-born countertenor Franco Fagioli with an aria from Nicola Porpora's 1729 opera Semiramide Riconosciuta, which featured Farinelli as the male lead and Porpora's promising pupil Caffarelli somewhat further down the bill. Legend has it that Porpora kept the young Caffarelli working from the same sheet of exercises for 6 years, rising early and singing up to 6 hours a day, until Porpora finally declared, "I have no more to teach you, you are the greatest singer in Europe." Now armed with that extraordinary castrato combination of a pure, unbroken voice, but with the lung capacity of an adult male, the confident Caffarelli made his debut at Carnival in Rome in the opera Valdemaro by Domenico Sarro. He was listed with the stage name Caffarellino, probably a reference to his youth, and he was cast in the third female role, which meant he had to sing this aria. Here's Franco Fagioli again, along with a playful trumpet and some astonishing runs.
Thank you.
Countertenor Franco Fagioli with an aria from Domenico Sarro's opera Valdemaro, first given in Rome at carnival time in 1726 by the 16-year-old castrato Caffarelli. So Caffarelli was on his way, and he launched himself on what would become an extraordinarily successful and lucrative career. Those early performances made such an impression that pretty soon he was in great demand all over Italy. Audiences were astonished by his wide range, which took him right up to top C, and, of course, the effortless way he could add show-stopping trills and ornaments. As his fame spread, composers lined up to write roles specially for him. He was booked to appear in Venice, Naples, Turin, Milan, Florence, and in January 1732, returned to Rome to star in Caio Fabrizio, a new opera by the German composer Johann Adolf Hasse. The plot homed in on all the usual stuff, the emotional entanglements of the rulers of ancient Rome, with battles and broken promises aplenty, and it featured no less than six castrati. I'd love to have been a fly on the wall backstage. Here's the soprano Simone Kemes in one of the arias that Hasse wrote for Caffarelli to show off what he could do. the soprano Simon Kermes with Se tu non senti odio from Hasse's opera Caio Fabrizio, an aria first performed at the Capranica Theatre in Rome in January 1732 by the young castrato Caffarelli. 2 years later, Caffarelli took up a post at the Royal Chapel in Naples, and over the next 20 years, he was often to be seen on stage at the city's Teatro San Carlo in operas by Hasse, Gluck, Leo Vinci, his old teacher Porpora, and Giovanni Pergolesi. Pergolesi was an exact contemporary of Caffarelli, and at 24 years old, still something of a rising star himself, so it was a bit of a coup that he managed to persuade Caffarelli to take a chance on the work of such a young composer. His opera, Adriano in Syria, was written to celebrate the birthday of the Queen of Spain, and the new Bourbon King, Charles III, really pushed the boat out for his mum, laying on the most expensive costumes ever seen and hiring a magnificent cast of the region's most starry singers. The complicated plot, full of royal passions, secret passages and dramatic escapes, was based on a libretto by the highly acclaimed poet Metastasio. But in order to keep Caffarelli happy, Pergolesi doctored the original text almost beyond recognition so that Caffarelli had more to do. Here's Franco Fagioli again in one of the arias that made the cut. It's about a caged nightingale and features a solo oboe duetting with the voice, some lovely chromatic touches, and of course lots of trills, all very seductive.
Thank you.
an aria from Pergolesi's opera Adriano in Syria, first performed in Naples in 1734 by the 24-year-old castrato Caffarelli in the role of Prince Farnaspe. As Caffarelli's fame grew, though, so did his ego. Of course, castrati were well known for their showmanship. It was all part of the package. But Caffarelli was also notorious for his unpredictability and displays of temperament, both on and off stage. He would insist on singing his own preferred versions of arias, irrespective of what his colleagues were doing, and sometimes mimic them behind their backs while they sang their own solos, or started conversations with members of the audience who were seated in the boxes. Off stage, his hot-headedness and pride led him to fighting duels, which resulted in house arrest for assault, and most famously in Dresden in 1744. It's said that he completely humiliated a prima donna during a performance of Hasse's opera Antigone, probably while she tried her best to get through this aria without throttling him.
Oh,
soprano Lea Desandro with an aria from Hasse's opera Antigone, first performed in Dresden in 1744 by an unnamed prima donna who, during one performance, had to tolerate the unprofessionalism of her co-star, the castrato Caffarelli, who seemed determined to go out of his way to put her off. But opera promoters felt that Caffarelli's fiery temperament was worth the risk. His fees may have been astronomical, but his outrageous showmanship guaranteed full houses. And in the late 1730s, having performed to an adoring public all over the continent, he crossed the channel to England, where these exotic men with their strange voices were the talk of the town. But money wasn't the only attraction. London was also the home of perhaps the greatest composer of Italian opera, George Frederick Handel. And although it cost the King's Theatre Company an absolute fortune to cast Caffarelli in the title role of his new production, Faramondo, Handel knew that it would put bums on seats. After the first performance, a London newspaper reported, "Last night, the new opera of Faramondo was performed at the King's Theatre to a splendid audience and met with general applause. It being the first time of Mr. Handel's appearance this season, he was honoured with extraordinary and repeated signs of approbation." If my death will appease you, I will not complain about fate and love. The countertenor Max Emanuel Cencic, with an aria from Handel's 1738 opera Faramondo, written for the great castrato Caffarelli, who took the London audiences by storm when he appeared there for the first time at the King's Theatre. Handel, of course, was something of a fiery character himself, but he somehow managed to keep Caffarelli's outbursts and on-stage shenanigans under control. And later that same year came the composer's next offering, the opera Circe, which was loosely based on the story of Xerxes, the king of Persia. It was an innovative departure from the norm for Handel. The worlds of opera seria and opera buffa, the serious and the comic, were generally kept well apart so that audiences knew what to expect, either tragic or funny. But in Circe, Handel dabbled in both, which apparently left people rather bewildered, including Charles Burney, who wrote, "I have not been able to discover the author of the words of this drama, but it is one of the worst Handel ever set to music, for besides feeble writing, there is a mixture of tragic comedy and buffoonery in it, which I thought had been banished from serious opera." So, not a great reception for Handel's new work, or indeed for Caffarelli, who sang the title role. That said, his opening aria is a thing of beauty. "Never was the shade of any plant dearer or more sweet. Ombra mai fu," sung here by Andreas Scholl. Three minutes exceptionally well spent, I'd say. Andreas Scholl with the Berlin Academy for Alte Musik with Ombra mai fu from Handel's opera Circe, an aria whose lilting simplicity has made it such a great favourite today. And yet the first production of Circe in London in 1738 was really a bit of a disaster. Audiences and critics just couldn't get their heads around its mixture of comedy and tragedy. And after just a handful of performances, it closed, not to be seen again for almost 200 years. As for its star, Caffarelli, who was still in his 20s, it was bye-bye Handel, arrivederci London, and back to the continent with his tail firmly between his legs. Not that the experience dented his confidence or his career for very long. Over the next 15 years or so, he took starring roles in operas in Madrid, Dresden, Vienna, Lisbon in the year of the Great Earthquake, and Versailles, thanks to an invitation from King Louis XV himself. Although it must be said that Caffarelli's time in France was rather dramatically cut short after he badly wounded a poet during a duel and he had to leave in disgrace. During this whole period, one constant in Caffarelli's career was that job at the Chapel Royal in Naples, which kept the opportunities and, of course, the money steadily rolling in. In 1747, Caffarelli took part in a new production of Hasse's opera Siroe in Naples. It was familiar territory for him, actually. He'd appeared in the premiere of that very opera in Bologna more than 10 years earlier, with the great Farinelli that time in the title role. Now, though, with Farinelli long since gone into retirement, this was a chance for Caffarelli to outshine his most famous rival. And he grabbed it with both hands.
Oh,
What a performance, Franco Fagioli with the ensemble Il Pomodoro, directed by Riccardo Minassi, in that tempestuous aria from Hasse's opera Siroe, sung originally by the equally tempestuous castrato Caffarelli in Bologna in 1733. Caffarelli's voice was a mezzo-soprano with a wide range and a high tessitura. And while his closest rival Farinelli had retired at just the age of 32, Caffarelli kept on performing well into his 50s. He has brought perfection to his art with his angelic voice, facility and precision, wrote the German critic Friedrich Grimm. And it was certainly a comfortable retirement. From his vast performance fees, Caffarelli amassed a great fortune, which allowed him to buy himself a dukedom and impressive estates in Naples and Calabria. On one of his palazzos, he added on the wall an inscription in Latin which read, "Amphion built Thebes, I this house," although a local wag had carved underneath, "He with, you without," which you might say was a bit below the belt, if you see what I mean. But with or without, Caffarelli didn't have a mortgage to worry about, so he certainly had the last laugh. And it seems that the passing of time eventually softened his temperament too. In the latter years of his life, he donated extensively to charity. And when Burney met him, he wrote how impressed he was by the singer's politeness. Caffarelli's teacher Porpora, who, according to Burney, loathed the singer's arrogance, nonetheless claimed that he was the greatest singer Italy had ever produced. So let's end with an aria from one of the roles Porpora wrote for him. It's from the opera Germanico in Germania.
Aria from Nicola Porpora's opera Germanico in Germania, sung there by the soprano Mary Ellen Nessie, with Kapela Krakowienis, conducted by Jan Thomas Adamus. And that brings to an end today's edition of The Early Music Show, which was presented by Lucy Skeeping and produced in Salford by Les Pratt. On next week's programme, Lucy's back to explore the folk music of Poland that inspired Telemann during the year he spent working there in 1705. That's next Sunday at 2 o'clock.
Live BBC Proms on Radio 3. Beethoven's 7th Symphony, a dazzling, pulsing, irresistible tour de force. I'm Tom Service, and together with the conductor, Nicholas Cullen, we're putting this symphony under the microscope to discover the simple building blocks that Beethoven uses to create this ecstatic, earth-shaking work. That's before Aurora Orchestra perform the symphony from memory. Join us live from the Royal Albert Hall this Thursday evening at 7:30 on Radio 3 and BBC Sounds.
This is BBC Radio 3 with me, Chris Barrow, and it's 3 o'clock. Time for this week's broadcast of Choral Evensong, recorded in St Patrick's Church of Ireland Cathedral, Armagh, during the 2015 Charles Wood Festival and Summer School. The canticles are sung to the second setting in E-flat by Charles Wood, and the anthem is Lord, Thou Hast Searched Me Out, words from Psalm 139, set to music by John Rutter, who attended the festival that year as part of his 70th birthday celebrations. The service begins now with an introit by Charles Wood, Oculi Omnium, the eyes of all wait upon thee, O Lord, and thou givest them their meat in due season.